Lovely celebration of Shivaratri in Prashanti 10 days ago. The bliss of Shivaratri mornings is something ethereal. As the boys chant the different hymns and as you visualize Swami sitting there and just lost in the stillness and the sereneness of that morning, you almost feel like you are in Kailasha. Swami is sitting there. The Sachidananda Sarupa, the Bhavatita, the Gunatita, just lost in the Bhava of people. Tridalam Trigunakaram Trinetram Chaturyayudham Trijanma Papa Samharam Ekabilvam Shivarpanam Trishakhai Bilvapatram cha Achyutrai Komalai Shubhai Tava Pujam Karishyami Ekabilvam Shivarpanam.
We offer the three-leaved bilva
to the three-eyed Shiva, which can liberate us from the sins done in our three janmas, and which is like a potent weapon, like a three-pronged weapon. And we offer everything to the Shiva who radiates beyond the three qualities. Somehow, three has an interesting connotation, a very sacred connotation in Indian culture and spirituality. And as I was ruminating on this, what occurred to me is what Bhagwan would say often. He would say, you are not one, but three. The one you think you are, the one others think you are, and the one you really are. And I thought, what does this really mean? Many years ago, before the Trayi Vrindavan was constructed, Bhagwan used to live in a building which is now called the Old Bungalow. Swami set up the college in Vrindavan in 1969. There were very few students then, and the boys had the access to Bhagwan's compound almost any time of the day. They never sat for darshans along with the devotees. They were all the time hovering in Bhagwan's compound. So one morning, Swami emerges from his residence for darshan, and there are these boys who are standing on the pathway, and out of the blue, Swami asks one boy, "Hey boy, who are you?" This boy, a bit perturbed, never expected such a question early in the morning. So he said, "Swami, I am a student of your college." That is what just came out naturally, could not think of anything else. Swami said, "Okay." He moved on, he looked at the next boy. "Hey, who are you?" And this boy thought, maybe I should give little more details. So he said, "Swami, I am from the state of Madhya Pradesh, and this is my name, and this is the class I am studying." And so he gave little more biographic details. And Swami heard that quite disinterestedly, moved on to the third boy. "Who are you?" And this boy thought, Swami is not pleased with the previous answers. I think I should just say something which comes from my heart. And he just bowed down, submitted himself to Swami, and he said, "Swami, I am your child, Swami." Swami was happy. Swami patted his cheeks and he got a pad namaskar, and Swami smiled nicely. He was happy. But the questioning continued. He moved on to the next boy, fourth boy. "Who are you?" And this boy thought, I thought the third boy had answered it pretty well. Swami was so happy. He's asking again, which means I have to give something, you know, which is really otherworldly. I have to give something which will really impress him. And he thought about what could it be, and he congratulated himself. He suddenly remembered the discourse that Swami had given the previous evening, and Swami had mentioned that, you know, there is only one ultimate principle. Everything merges into that principle. Everything is just a derivation of that. Everything is only one ultimate. So he remembered soham. He said, "Swami, soham, I and you are one." Swami said, "Oh, really? I and you are one? Then why don't you go and give darshan? People are waiting there." And the boy didn't know how to respond. He just thought he will impress Swami. He thought he was smart enough. You can never outsmart God. So he immediately bowed down and, you know, he prayed forgiveness for his foolishness. Then Swami said, "See, what you said is right, but if you had said that from the core of your being, if you really believed what you said, with all your heart, all your soul, all your mind, with your everything, if you're really convinced of what you said, then even if you had gone out and given darshan, people would have seen not you, but me." But you have to say it from the depths of your being, not from your lips. To me, just this 3-minute conversation that Swami had with the students is spirituality encapsulated as succinctly and as beautifully as it can be. That is the magic of an avatar. He can convey the deepest of truths in such quote-unquote casual conversations. To me, This is the entire evolution of every person. This is what the essence of all our spiritual practices are. This is what is the meaning of every breath that we are taking. This conversation with Swami, it will take a lifetime for us to ruminate on this. The one you think you are, the one others think you are, and the one you really are. The one you think you are. Someone asks me, who are you? What do you think you are? The normal responses would be, okay, I am Bishu, I work here, I am short, and yeah, I like to sing, I like to run. And somebody else will say, I'm a businessman, I work in this company, I have 2 children, and so on and so forth. I have achieved so much in life. I think I am a reasonably successful person. I think there is so much more. I have a lot of respect. So that is what anyone would normally describe who you are. But is that me? Who are you? The one you think you are. So is this me? The one others think you are. Okay, different people have different perceptions of me. So somebody might think that I'm not so good at my job. Someone else might feel that I'm great at my job. Someone else might think that I'm far from being a good singer. Another one might think that I'm just bearable as a singer. Someone else might think that I'm very kind. Another person will think that it's all a show. So different people have different perceptions of me. So the one others think I am, is that me? The one you really are. Okay, Swami says you are God. I know that. I mean, we heard it so many times. But am I really God? I mean, do I get up every morning and think I am divine? I am God. The first thing you get up in the morning and okay, I have to go. I have to finish this work in the office. I have to ensure that my boss is happy with this work. And then I have to ensure that I make this arrangement for my kid. I have to make this investment for my son. I have to get this medicine for my mother. Ensure that I please my boss. So this is what goes on in our mind every morning as we get up. So what are all these thoughts? All these thoughts relate to the body, isn't it? They relate to the physical self. They relate to whom we identify ourselves with, and most of the time we identify ourselves with this physical frame, with the connections that we have formed with this physical frame, with our relationship, with our job, our possessions, our position, our profession. So everything is related to the body. And Swami says the one you think you are relates to your physical self. It's absolutely the body consciousness. And today, if we see, most of the people, most of the time, cannot think beyond the body, isn't it? We are in a time which, I won't be wrong to say that we are in a body-obsessed age. You will find a youngster who probably will not have 15 minutes to sit in front of the altar and pray, but he will have easily 15 minutes to sit in front of the mirror and adjust that one strand of hair which is not fitting properly. Statistics say that 80% of the women in America spend at least 1 hour every day in front of the mirror. It's with every one of us. We are all the time so obsessed with our physical selves. Other day, I read this news item which really intrigued me. It said, immortality is the new IT. I said, what has IT got to do with immortality, information technology? What has this got to do with immortality? We've heard Swami say that removal of immorality is the way to immortality. As I read the article, I realized that techies are saying, remove morality or immortality. You give me IT, I will give you immortality. You give me information technology, I will give you immortality. And as I read further, I discovered that all these tech moguls of today, all the people who have made huge amounts of money thanks to technological innovations, now they are on this quest of living forever through technology. They sincerely believe that they can beat death through technology. So that's why you have Larry Ellison, who is the co-founder of Oracle. His net worth is $52 billion, and he has set up this foundation called Ellison Medical Research Foundation, which is into lot of research into age-related diseases. He says, death does not make any sense to me. I mean, how can it be that one person is there today and tomorrow he's not there? It doesn't make sense. So we have to fix this problem with humanity. And he's spending $450 million into this research. You have Sergey Brin, who is the co-founder of Google. His net worth is $39.8 billion. And he has spent $150 million into research, into DNA. And he says, I'm on this quest to cure death. Death is basically a disease and it can be cured. You have Larry Page, the other co-founder of Google, who has started this Calico, California Life Company, which is again spent $750 million into research into age-related diseases. He feels that our body is just a bundle of organs, so you can just fix an organ and continue to live. You have Mark Zuckerberg, founder of Facebook. He says that what I am most interested in is how we can live forever. So when I read all these news items, what intrigued me, yes, there is a lot of money being spent, and between Larry Page and Sergey Brin, they have nearly $900 million they have put into research, into DNA. Interestingly, both of them, Sergey Brin has a genetic mutation. He knows that as he ages, he will get Parkinson's. And Larry Page has a disease called Hashimoto's thyroiditis, which is again a dangerous condition. So basically, they are trying to see how they can beat their genes and live forever. So that is what is driving these people to spend so much amount of money. Yes, perhaps there will be some breakthroughs. Facebook founder, I mean, he has instituted a prize, a $33 million prize for breakthroughs in age-related diseases. So, on one hand, I am happy that so much money is going into research, which will probably help some people to lead better lives. But what bothers me is this idea that through technology, we can live forever. Because you are thinking you are just this body, and just like a machine, if it is not working, all it needs is you go to the garage, you know, if a car is not working, go to the garage, replace the organ, replace the part, brakes are not working, the fuel tank is not working, replace it and you will live and the car will work forever. So similarly, do what the body wants, whatever the body demands, you do whatever the body drives you because you are the body. And if something is not working, doesn't matter, you just change the organ, the liver is not working, you feel like eating so much chips, eat it, doesn't matter. You know, if the liver doesn't work, change the liver. That's it. And you will live forever. This is what some of the brilliant minds of today are thinking. These are people who are idols for the current generation techies. So I'm saying all this just to say how we have become so body obsessed in today's times. We think all the strength comes from the body. We think that if we can somehow do something to our DNA, because we are just the body. The biologist will tell you that we are just a social animal. Man is a social animal. And then you'll have the sociologist who will say that man is just a mere human. If somebody does some bizarre thing like shooting hundreds of children in a classroom, you say, you know, he's genetically disposed that way. You know, his body is made like that. There's nothing wrong with him. He's just driven by his body. So we are caught in this delusion of body obsessiveness. We fail to realize that strength actually comes from somewhere else. That reminded of this very beautiful incident. This happened in the 80s. And Swami once came to the indoor stadium. At that point in time, you didn't have the Sri Sathya Sai Center for International Sports. Bhagwan used to spend a lot of time with the students we know. And also, he would come to the ground and watch the sports activities. He would be there for volleyball matches, for table tennis matches. So one day, Swami stepped into the gymnasium. The boys were there doing their stuff on the handlebars and picking up stuff and building their muscles. Swami came there and started talking about what they should do to warm up their bodies, what they should wear, how they should eat, how they should exercise, which exercise they should do first, which they should do next, how they can build their bodies. And as Swami was talking all this, there was one boy who was really a very well-built boy. And he thought, Swami talking about building bodies, muscles, No, not everyone those days came from a Sai background. So he was thinking, I mean, look at Swami himself. He's so frail. I mean, he's so delicate. And he's giving us advice about building muscles. He was listening to everything, but with a lot of, there was a contemptuous smile on his face, and Swami noticed that nothing escapes him. And Swami said, so you think strength comes from the body? Everyone was quiet. Because, you know, so many boys also had this thought. I mean, Swami advising us, Swami talking to us about spirituality, Advaita is fine. But, you know, Swami talking to us about building muscles, little funny. So, Swami looks at this boy and Swami says, how strong are you? This boy didn't know how to react. Swami looks at his arm, his biceps, and Swami says, how strong are you? Let's see who is strong. So, there is this beautiful setting. So, on that exercise bench, what starts is an interesting arm wrestling match between Swami and this boy. Swami is there and this boy is thinking, oh my God, Swami is so delicate, you know, I should not hurt Swami. So he's been very, very careful. He doesn't want to put any pressure, and the match starts. Boys are there around. So this boy puts little pressure, but he feels, oh my God, this is so strong. There is so much power. Then he's seeing that he's just being subdued, so he puts a little more pressure, but he's not able to move even an inch, and now his muscles are becoming taut, his nerves are being stretched, face is becoming red. Oh my God, he's not able to move even a millimeter. And Swami is so calm, Swami is the same serene self, Swami is smiling, and this boy doesn't know why he's not able, he's so strong, he's so well built, he's not able to move even a millimeter. And he looks at all the other boys helplessly, and the other boys take the clue and they come and join him. So there are now 2-3 boys joining this arm wrestling duel with the divine. All of them try, and Swami, the same peaceful self, now all of them are struggling, putting all their energy, all their strength, still they're not able to move even a little. And they're all exhausted, huffing and puffing and panting. Then finally, dhup, Swami puts everyone down. The first thought that comes to everyone's mind is, oh, Swami is God, you know, so he can do anything, obviously. They take time to recover, and as they are back to breathing normally, Swami asks, how was it? And the boy said, Swami, you are God, Swami. You can put the whole world down, Swami. Swami said, I am not here to put the whole world down. I am here to put the whole world up. I am here to raise the whole world. I am not here to put the whole world down. And Swami said, this has got nothing to do with my divine strength. This is simply the power of purity. From the time I took this form on this planet, there is not even one deed that is wrong committed by this body. This body from top to toe is pure. And what you saw is just the power of that purity. This has got nothing to do with my divine strength. So where does strength come from? Strength comes from not so much from the body. It comes from something higher. It comes from purity. And Swami says, the one you think you are is materialization. In Gayatri Mantra, we are Bhur Bhuva Swaha. You are materialized from the earth. That is gross. The one you think you are is gross. That is materialization. The next is vibration. The one others think you are. Most of the time, we vibrate not so much thinking what we are, but if you see our lives, most of the time, our vibes are based on what others think we are, isn't it? We are all the time concerned about what this person is thinking about me, what that person is thinking about me. If a person is getting his daughter married, for example, now he will want to book a prestigious marriage hall, a prestigious convention hall, so that when people come and people see all the arrangement, he wants everyone to say that, oh wow, this man really belongs to the elite. This man is really rich. I mean, he's really made it big. He want to have a lavish party, 3-4 curries, 5-6 sweets, so that everyone after they finish, you want them to congratulate you and tell, oh my God, such a thing, such a feast for the eyes and feast for the stomach, feast for the sense. We have never before seen. You are amazing. We are not concerned so much about, oh, this is my daughter's wedding. I have to do something because my daughter deserves the best. I have to give something best to my daughter. It is not so much because I have to ensure that everyone who comes, they have to have a sumptuous meal. I'm not thinking what they can digest, what they cannot digest, what they can eat, what they cannot eat. If I'm really concerned about them, I will think and arrange the feast that way. But most of the time, we are worried about what others will say. If I give this gift, what others will say? I'm a small family, just husband and wife or a little kid. I can buy a small car. No, but I live in this locality, you know, I live in this area. So it's really not nice for me to have a small Maruti wagon or something. I really need to have at least a Honda City, at least a Hyundai Accent or something. So most of the time we see we are so much conditioned by what others perceive of us. Especially in the cities, if you see the expenditure of people, I think 40 to 50% of the expenditure will be on maintaining the perceptions of other people about us. We are so much all the time concerned about what others think of us. The one you think you are is where you are body obsessed, and now you are mind obsessed, but you are obsessed with others' minds. If I sing and if someone didn't congratulate me, then you'll think, oh my, why did he not congratulate me? You know, maybe he doesn't think that I'm so good a singer. What does he think? Does he think that he sings better than me? I complimented him last time. This time he doesn't compliment me. Next time I will not compliment him. So all that goes on in our mind, because all the time we are thinking what others are thinking about us. Other day I read this interesting thing about Japan. Of course, to me this is something like extreme. So they have what is called a family rental service. So in Japan, you can hire anyone. You can hire friends, you can hire brother, you can hire sister, you can hire even a father, you can hire even a mother, you can hire a partner. Everyone can be hired. If you're getting married and you know you want that it should look good, there should be this many guests. So you can pay and have like 20 people who will come and pose as your friends. There was one person who was marrying the second time, he didn't want the other guests to know, so he bought really 50 people. He bought father, mother, sister, everyone, the entire family was bought. He bought. Everything is there for a price. You can buy anyone. Someone goes out for a vacation and you know, you see all these people posting beautiful pictures on Facebook, so you want your pictures also to look good, so you can hire 4 friends. You go out with them and pose nicely and post on Facebook. There are single mothers who want that the child should feel that she has a father, the little daughter, so they hire a person who will act as a father, and this person acts as a father for not 1 year, 2 years, for 3 years, 4 years, 5 years. It goes on. So there are this company which has 800 actors. And this demand is growing. Every year, this company is only prospering. Because everyone wants to feel good. They want to look good. So it becomes such a fake attempt. We are all the time doing drama. Why? Because we are all the time looking outside. We are all the time worried about what the outside is thinking of me. Many years ago, you know, there were these boys who were waiting for Bhagwan. These are called waiting boys. Boys who are waiting for instructions from Swami before they can take up any job. They all want to serve here. And you know, they're all the time looking for opportunities with Swami. So you will find these boys giving letters, you know, all the time asking Swami, Swami, give me this job, or Swami, do this for me, do that for me, and all that. Even I was there waiting for him to give me an opportunity to work. And there are some boys who take little liberties with Swami. So one day when Bhagwan came, this boy said, Swami, I want interview. He showed the interview room. I want to go to the interview room. Because he wanted an interview with Swami. Swami was already in the bhajan hall. Swami was talking to them. Swami was asking them about what they had for breakfast. It was a very light-hearted conversation that Swami was already having in the bhajan hall. But this boy wanted a session with Swami in the interview room. He said, Swami, interview room. Swami said, okay, go to the interview room. There's so many boys who went to the interview room. They were all there inside the interview room. And Swami continued to be inside the bhajan hall. And Swami was talking to just 2-3 boys were left, because these boys were singers, so they cannot go because bhajans will start. They have to be there for the bhajans. So they were there. They were waiting for bhajans to start. And Swami was there talking to them. And all these horde of boys went inside the interview room. They're waiting for Swami to come. It was 8:30, 8:40, 8:45. But Swami didn't go inside the interview room. They think, oh my God, 10 minutes are left, 15 minutes are left, you know, because once bhajan starts, you can't have conversations with Swami. Your time with Swami becomes less. So they're waiting, Swami, come. You know, first they enjoyed there, sitting in the interview room. Now each person took where they want to sit. Someone sits next to the chair, someone sits next to the door. Think of the vantage positions, and you're waiting for Swami to come. And it's already 8:45, 8:50, Swami's not come. 8:55, oh my God, 5 minutes left, bhajans will start.
Swami is not come. Bhajan started. Om. Swami is still sitting outside. What is this? He told us to go to the interview room and he is sitting outside. Bhajan started earlier at least. During bhajans, they were sitting in front. During bhajans, they had the chance to sit in front and enjoy Bhagwan. After the bhajans are over, they have the chance to push the stool. Now, bhajans are going on. Swami is sitting outside. They are sitting inside. Not even having the chance to enjoy bhajans with Swami. 3 bhajans over, 4 bhajans over. Arati, those days, there will be just 20-25 minutes of bhajans. Arati over. Okay, maybe Swami will come after the arati. After the arati, Swami started walking back. Swami left. And all this, what is this? And after that, they got the message that Swami has left. You may please come out. You wanted the interview room, right? You got the interview room. So if you're all the time focused outside, you'll get empty. You'll be left with nothing. And that is what we are chasing most of the time. When we are focused outside. If you're told, Swami, we want you. What do you want? Instead of telling Swami, interview room. Swami, I want you. I want interview, Swami. Why does this thing happen with us? When we look outside, what happens most of the time? We compare. We cannot not compare. In fact, all our miseries, 90% of our miseries are because we compare. This person has that and I don't. My friend's son got seat in IIT and my son did not get seat in IIT. That is our main problem. Even when Bhagwan was there, that is the problem. You are not so unhappy that Swami didn't talk to you. You are most unhappy that Swami didn't talk to you, but Swami spoke to the other person. That is what hurts us more. If Swami had not spoken to the other person, it would have been okay. Okay, he didn't speak to the other person also. Our whole problem is we compare. Even with divinity, every time we compare. Why we compare? Because we look outside. The one others think we are. We're all the time obsessed with others' minds. Many years ago, again, one day Swami was going in the car and Swami asked this boy to come inside the car. I mean, it was such a huge opportunity for him to be inside the car with Swami. So there was one devotee, elderly devotee, sitting with Swami in the rear seat and he was in the front seat. And the car started, they were going towards Beltur, the village near Whitefield. And this boy thought, oh my God, this is lifetime opportunity I have got. I'm sitting with Swami in the car, but there is silence in the car. There is no talk happening, nothing happening. So he wants to start some conversation, you know, with Swami. So he quietly just looks behind, you know, what is Swami doing? And he sees Swami staring at him actually. Oh my God. So he says, you know, I have to start some conversation. So he says, Swami, in the night when I sleep, Swami, I don't get sleep, Swami. I keep thinking about you, Swami. All the time your thoughts envelop my mind. And Swami said, hey, all lies. When you go to bed, you sleep. Not only you sleep, you snore. Don't tell all these stories. Oh my God, this boy got stumped. What to tell now? Then he said, Swami, how to control this mad mind, Swami? Please, Swami. And Swami said, controlling the mind, it is the easiest thing to do. The most easiest thing to do is to control the mind. And the most difficult thing to achieve in this world is to not to control the mind. And the boy is like, oh my God, this is the most complex conundrum I have ever heard. What you think is most difficult, Swami is saying, it's the most easy. Swami said, see, Swami took the handkerchief. It is so easy. If I drop the handkerchief, it is so easy to keep the handkerchief in my hand, to pick the handkerchief, to hold on to the handkerchief. That is what needs effort. That is what needs energy. That is what needs stress. That is what needs so much of concentration, energy, everything. But to leave it is so easy. So, if you go after the mind, if you hold on to the mind, that is the most difficult thing to do. Just let it go. You just let it go. That is the easiest thing to do. Be a witness. In fact, if you run after the dog will run, you know. If you're running, the dog will run. But if you just stand and the dog will become quiet. It will come near you actually. It's the same with the mind. If you constantly pursue it, if you are after it, then it will make you run. But if you just let it go, it will come to you. I feel this can happen only when we stop bothering about what others are thinking about us. We stop looking outside. We have to move from the one that others think of me to the one who thinks of others. We have to make that transition. We have to move from the one who is all the time obsessed about what others are thinking about me to someone who is all the time concerned about others.
I remember many years ago when Swami went to Hyderabad, there was Mr. Raman Rao, very ardent devotee of Bhagwan. He is one of the first sevadals that Swami recruited, and he was there until 91 years serving Swami at various capacities. Swami never allowed him to leave the position of National Service Coordinator. When Swami went to Hyderabad in those days, Swami said, "Raman Rao, I am coming to your house tomorrow." You know what was his response? Swami, why you want to come to my house, Swami? Swami, please come to that ground, Swami. So many thousands of devotees are waiting. They will be so happy. Simply you will come to my house, my wife, my children. What is the big deal, Swami? Why you have to come to my house? Very, very few devotees would actually do this. Think, oh, Swami is coming to my house. What a great opportunity for me, for my 10th generations. Because your focus is always on what you can do for others. Because once you make that transition, then you can reach that stage of who we really are. Swami says materialization, vibration, radiation. Other day I read this story about one person called Harakchand Salva. So this person had a small shop opposite the Tata Memorial Cancer Hospital in Mumbai. And every day, you know, as he's selling his stuff in his shop, he would see all these people coming out of the hospital, cancer hospital, and everyone's face, there is so much pain. Everyone's face, there is so much of tragedy. Not only the patients, the patient relatives, and especially all these poor people. You can see from their faces that it is like a mountain of tragedy which has befallen on their lives. And he used to always feel pained looking at this, and he used to always feel, I should do something. He was in his probably 20s. So one day he decided, no, I have to do something. He was not a rich person. He had a tiny shop. He said, no, I have to do something. And so he said, you know, I'm going to provide meals to all these people. At least to that extent I can relieve. When they come out of the hospital with so much of sorrow, at least they don't have to go somewhere searching for food. I will at least start serving food to all these poor patients. So he started doing that service, providing meals. Slowly, 50 people, 100 people, 200 people, slowly that whole Seva project grew, and today, every day, nearly 700 people have food there, and that whole place has grown. There are so many people who have contributed. He has started a non-governmental organization, a charity trust, and he is involved now in 40 such projects. Now he brings doctors, he brings pharmacists who also help freely look after his patients, and he's bought toys for the children. He's 57 now, and for 27 years he's been doing this work. And all the people say that Mr. Salva, he's not Mr. Salva, he's Mr. God. He's Mr. God for us. That is how he treats us, the one we really are. If we cannot become God, we can at least become godly. At least can we give that experience to people. You know what? Such a beautiful feeling. I feel like I'm talking to someone who's so filled with love for God, who so resonates with that compassion that Jesus embodied, that Buddha embodied. Can we give that feeling to people? That will be our journey. Instead of being obsessed with others' minds, we can be obsessed with other people's concerns. We can be obsessed with others, the tragedy in their hearts. There was this doctor from Bangalore, Dr. Vishal Rao. He is an oncologist and also a head and neck surgeon. He used to operate on this throat cancer patients. He noticed that, you know, most of them have to be operated on and their voice box has to be removed. So they cannot speak. There are artificial voice boxes, but it costs a lot. It costs 20,000-30,000 rupees, and these voice boxes have to be changed every few months. So this is not something that a auto rickshaw guy, that a watchman can afford. It bothered him so much that he, along with another friend of his, started to think how we can make some affordable voice boxes. Because when a person loses voice, they feel so incapacitated. You feel like life is gone. You're not able to communicate, not able to express. So, and he, along with his friend, they did research and they found out a new voice box which today is sold just for rupees 50. It's a $1 box, voice box. And he called it the Om voice box, because he says, you know, Om is the sound with which creation started. And for all these people, you know, the sound starts again once they speak again. So he called it the Om voice box. for so many people, He is nothing less than God. Can we give that experience of God? Can we create those God moments in people's life? That will be our journey, where we move from the one you think you are, the one others think you are, to the one you really are. Many years ago, Swami was in the mandir. These are days in the 80s, early 90s. Swami used to stay in the Prashant Nilayam mandir. At that point in time, you never know when Swami will come out, because you were just staying upstairs. So you would find boys actually in the mandir for most of the time. There are some boys who had finished their education and they used to stay in that old hostel, what is called the old hostel now, just in front of the mandir, East Prashanti, close to East Prashanti. So there'll be boys who would always be in the mandir, because you don't know when Swami can come out. One day this boy had this urge to go and sit in mandir. It was afternoon, 2 p.m. Very, very unlikely time for Swami to come out, but he just had this urge. No, I will go and I will sit in mandir. So Anil came to the mandir, and you know, he was sitting in the mandir. There was no one in the mandir. This is the time Swami retires. It was birthday time, so there were this polishing of the shrine happening in the mandir. So all this silver, you have this lingam, the base of the lingam and the sesha sai. So all that was being polished. There were artisans who were doing that work, and there was no one else in the mandir. And he was sitting inside the bhajan hall, and just thinking about Swami, and he was wondering, you know, how nice it would be if Swami really comes, because nobody is there, you know, I would have my one-to-one time with Swami. How fantastic it will be. Just wishful thinking, sitting there, and even as he's thinking that, and he's looking up, he sees, to his utter surprise, Swami is looking at him from the window, from top, you know, the hall is big, the window is there from the top. Swami is looking at him, and you know, he cannot contain his joy. I mean, imagine, you just think that how nice it would be, Swami is there, and Swami is really there. Swami comes down. Swami now sees the work that these artisans are doing, and he talks to them. He encourages them. You know, as usual, Swami, the moment he comes, he will give them some fruit, some sweets. So all that Swami was doing. And then he was returning. This boy, he didn't want to be really conspicuous, but you would wish how nice it would be if Swami speaks to me, but you can't superimpose yourself. So he was sitting quietly there. What had happened was, these artisans, they had removed Swami's picture, the huge picture of Swami, which is in the altar. They had removed it and they had kept it on a pedestal down. And this boy was actually sitting next to that. So as Swami was leaving, suddenly Swami's eyes fell on that photograph. Swami then looked at this boy, and then Swami started walking. Swami started coming towards this boy, and this boy's joy knew no bounds. Swami's really coming towards me. So Swami came, Swami looked at this photo, top to toe, top to toe. Then Swami looked at this boy, and Swami said, "Hey, who is he? Who is in the photo?" He said, "Swami, it is you, Swami." Swami said, "Who is he to you? The one who is in the photo, who is he to you?" And this boy thought, you know, what to answer. Other day, Swami had mentioned in the discourse that all of you should have some personal relationship with Swami. Swami had said, have a connect with Swami. Consider him as your friend, father, mother, whatever, but develop a personal relationship with Swami. So he was thinking, what should I say? My friend, father, mother, what? So he said, "Swami, everything, Swami. You are everything, Swami." Swami said, "No, no, no." So what did he say wrong? Finally, Swami looked at him and said, "You are he. You are he. The one you really are. That is what is radiation," Swami says. Again, in the 90s, there were so many devotees who had come from Indonesia. These devotees had come for 10 days to Prashant Nilayam. In those days, Swami used to give interviews to all these foreign groups quite frequently. So this group also, having come all the way from Indonesia, they were waiting for their chance. 2 days passed, 3 days passed, 5 days passed, 6 days passed. Swami didn't call. You know how painful it is when you go back to Indonesia and you have not had an interview. The previous group that went, they had a nice interview. Everyone who comes, whether they come from Azerbaijan or they come from Australia, they get an interview. And you've come from Indonesia, you have not got an interview. It's really bothering, it's paining in your heart. It's 8 days over, Swami does not look at you, Swami is not talking. And it is 9th morning and they are almost losing hope, crying and praying. And Swami comes that day and Swami looks at the group and Swami says, "How many You know, when Swami asks how many, which means there is a chance that he is going to call you inside. Generally, Swami would ask the number and then Swami would call the people inside. So Swami asks, how many? And the leader of the group got up and he said, Swami, 20, Swami. Swami said, 20? Oh, so I am not part of it. And he walked away. There were 20 people. Before this person could understand, recollect and, you know, correct himself, Swami had moved on. Oh my God, finally Swami spoke. You know, he asked how many, probably would have called, and you know, we missed this chance. So they collected themselves, let's not make this mistake again. So afternoon, they were hoping against hope that is their penultimate darshan. They are just there the next day morning and they will be gone. Tickets are booked. So the ninth day afternoon, darshan started. They are all sitting in the group and Swami comes again and they are just hoping if they can talk. And Swami comes to them and again Swami asks, how many? Now this person says, Swami, 21, Swami. Swami looks at the other people. Oh, so I am not there with you. I am not there with you. I am not there with you. Everybody, they were puzzled. What is Swami trying to say? Even before they could understand anything, Swami had moved on. Later they realized, oh my God. So Swami is there with everyone. So we are not 20, we are 40. Oh my God, how to understand what he wants? And Swami moved on. One more opportunity gone, you know. It's all over now. One more darshan. They cannot wait also for that darshan because tickets are booked. They have to immediately leave. You don't have time. We have to reach the airport. And they thought, you know, Swami played with us and we've just lost this lifetime opportunity. And all the people so sad. So next morning, they had reconciled that they are not going to get another opportunity. They thought, okay, at least let's have darshan. Swami came towards the group. This time, he did not say anything. And all the group, they were looking at him with so much eager eyes. And Swami looked at this leader. He asked, how many? And now this leader didn't want to give any answer. He just caught hold of Swami. Swami, I don't know anything, Swami. Whatever you say, Swami, please forgive us, Swami. He didn't want to give any answer. Swami, please, Swami. We don't understand anything, Swami. Please forgive us, Swami. You are everything, Swami. He just submitted himself. He told Swami, don't want to even think in front of you. Just please bless us. So Swami just, you know, lovingly blessed him and gave him Padmaskar. And Swami moved on. He moved on. He didn't call them for interview. And the darshan is over and they're going inside. Swami is finishing the darshan rounds and Swami is now going to the mandir. They're all sitting, you know, when there's a last darshan, okay, if not anything, you just had a nice darshan and Swami gave blessings. Swami is at least happy. Swami seemed so pleased with that surrender of the group. That was some solace. So as Swami was reaching the interview room door, from the mandir portico, Swami suddenly turned, looked at this group and said, come. And this group ran, dashed to the interview room. Imagine, they never thought it was going to happen. It's like heaven, gates of heaven were just open. So they rushed inside and the next 45 minutes, it was absolute bliss. Swami is talking to someone, creating vibhuti for someone else, curing someone's cancer, whatnot, rings, chains, vibhuti, all blessings. Everyone's heart is full. You know, all that penance that they had gone through, praying for him, it's all found fulfillment. Now, final moment. Swami always likes to do it in the most unexpected hour, you know, so that we remember it forever. So they are so happy. And then finally, Swami looked at the group leader and Swami said, it is not 20, it is not 21, it is not 40, it is 1. It is 1. I said, if you have this feeling of oneness, that is when you will experience the bliss when you do service. If you have the feeling of oneness, that is when you will experience the ecstasy when you do bhajans. If you have the feeling of oneness, that is when you will experience the joy when you do a pilgrimage. If you have the feeling of oneness, that is when your heart will exult in bliss when you are thinking of me. Tears will stream down your cheeks when you think of me, when you think that I am not different from you, the one you really are. The body and the mind, Swami says, they are mere instruments. What you are is the Atma. And you have only one connection. Your connection is only inside with the Atma. And the journey stops when you don't know that you are Atma because you have become the Atma. That is our journey. And we know that this is the journey, this is the end point, but how to reach there? And Swami very beautifully mentions in a discourse that the way to reach, the surest and the shortest way to reach here is through bhakti. Swami says, bhakti, shakti, rakti, virakti, bhukti and mukti. It starts with bhakti. You have to have faith. Once you have faith, then Swami says, this bhakti will give you shakti. This devotion will give you the strength. Other day I was talking to one person from Indonesia. You know, he has started this business with a few Sai friends. He wanted to run this business completely in Sai way. Completely following all the rules, how Swami would want us to treat employees, how Swami would want us to maintain profit and loss account, how Swami would want us to treat every person, every client. That's how they wanted to run this company. He has to export. It's a coconut business. He has to export coconuts. They've started with these 2-3 other Sai brothers. They have to get this export permit. So they go to this officer, submit the papers, and the officer says, you know what, fine, I mean, if you want this, then you have to give this much. Basically, there are under the table dealings. So if you pay this much bribe, then it will happen. Otherwise, it will not happen. He says, no, I have to think about it. So he goes back. They had a Sai conference. He talks to his other Sai brothers. What do we do? It is such a difficult situation because $40,000 worth of coconuts are in the container and they have to be shipped. And this guy is asking $1,500 as bribe. It's a difficult dilemma. And coconuts are perishable. All he wants is $1,500. If you give it, probably you will get the export license. And if you don't know, maybe all this $40,000 worth of coconuts will go waste. What do you do? But you want to run the company in Sai way. You don't want to give bribe. You don't want to take bribe. And he talks to his friends and they say, no, let's do whatever Swami wants us to do. And they take that leap of faith and they say, no. He calls up this person and says, you do it whenever you want. But I cannot give that money. I cannot give you the $1,500. He says, okay, up to you. Your business. This happens on a Friday. Monday morning, that container has to leave. And they're all very tensed. Monday evening, he gets a phone call from this office. And that lady says, sir, why didn't you tell us that you have such high connections? We didn't know that you have people in the government with such influential positions. You should have told that before. We never knew that you have such influential people in your company. He said, okay, but did you do the permit? Has the container gone? He said, yeah, I mean, of course. Please, next time anything, please feel free to tell us. We'll do it immediately. Until this day, he does not know who that high connection is. For him, this is the only high connection he knows. Where did that shakti come from? Where did that conviction come from? Where did that confidence come from? From devotion. From faith. So when you have faith, then you get shakti, Swami says. And once you have shakti, then you have rakti. Once you have shakti, then you have rakti. You have attachment to God. That's how you get more and more attached to God. And now, you know, he's so attached to Swami. Every weekend he's here in Prashanthi Nilayam. He all the time looking for cheap flights. Every weekend he's here. His two children have joined. That's another interesting story. 1 year before, he told his son, little one, you know, do you want to join primary school? Can you see the boys? They're so beautiful. They're so nice, so disciplined. He says, father, never. He says, okay, fine, you decide. After a few months, they go home, and one morning, this boy gets up, and he says, father, I have to become a Sai student. What happened? Swami came in my dream. Swami took me along with me. Swami was holding my head. He led me on, and we came to the Sai Kulwant Hall. In the Sai Kulwant Hall, I was there only with Swami, and he filled me with so much love. And then Swami was talking to me, and I saw so many Sai students. I don't know why I asked Swami, I want to become your student. I want to become your student. Swami said, definitely, definitely. Swami has told, I have to go. I have to join primary school. His sister, they are twins. His sister said, how can this happen? How can my brother go and I not go? I have to go. How can Swami do this? Only to him. And his father is saying, first of all, it's not as if I want primary school, they will just take my children just for me saying it. So many procedures. It's not as if it just will happen, the mere wishing of it. And his father says, I don't know how this is going to happen. 3 months later, this girl says, father, you know what? Swami came in my dream. And in the dream, I was in the car, you were with me in the car, and there was one person who was driving the car. After some time, you got down from the car, and this person was driving, and as I was looking at this driver, after some time, I saw
that this person who was driving, he changed. He was no more the driver. He changed. You know what? He changed into Swami. Swami was driving my car. Swami is leading my life. Swami is my goal. You know what? I have to go with Swami. I have to join Swami's school. I have to be with my brother. And they come here and they join. Miracle of miracles. They are still studying. So from bhakti, you have shakti. From shakti, you have rakti. You have attachment to God. And then you have virakti. As I was talking to him, he was telling, you know, how when you get attached to God, then slowly detachment also happens. This person was telling, you know, now I realize that Swami did all this because in some ways, perhaps we were so attached to the kids. Swami is now teaching us to leave the kids to Him. It is a lesson in detachment for us, more for us than for them. Perhaps it will be so difficult for us later on in life. So as we are growing on the spiritual path, Swami is already building in us to get more and more attached to Him and less detached to everything that is temporary in the world. So virakti. Once you have virakti, then slowly, ultimately, you get mukti, you become one. And that is what is the bhukti. Bhukti and mukti is ultimately where we have nothing, nobody, no other identity other than Sai, Sai and Sai.
Om Shri Satya Sai. Om Shri Satya Sai. Every day my life so beautiful as I keep myself to you. You are my guiding light. You make everything so bright. I will follow you wherever you want me to. I will follow you wherever you want me to. Just let me hold your hand and walk with you. Just let me hold your hand and see only you, only you, only you. Let me hold your hand and experience only you, only you. Samastaloka sukhino bhavantu. Samastaloka sukhino bhavantu. Samastaloka sukhino bhavantu. Shanti, shanti, shanti.